You're listening to the Reading Envy podcast, where I'll have what you're reading. Hi, everyone. This is Jenny. And today I'm back with the repeat guest. It's Yanira. Welcome back, Yanira.
I'm happy to be back.
So if you like what she has to say, you can go back to 5 different episodes, 70, 96, 108, 141, and 181. So that's been a lot, but it's still been over a year. So how have things been?
Been okay. I can't believe I've been on that many times. Every time I get an email from you, though, I get really excited about coming on.
Okay. So. And you'll have to forgive me a little if my voice sounds strange. I'm still recovering from some kind of throat thing. So we've actually had to delay this recording already once. So I'm going to make it through. We'll do it. So what is new in your reading life?
Well, I'm still reading, thankfully. Life has not taken that away from me. I'm thankful every time I get to finish a book. I've been embarking on a journey to be a more mindful reader. That's really came to me out of 2 weeks at the beginning of the year where I felt overwhelmed by the sheer thought of doing anything. And like for 2 whole weeks, I laid around my house doing absolutely nothing and just really depressed about picking anything up. Everything felt pointless because everything felt almost like a competition to get it done with myself. Like I felt that I was competing against my own emotions to do anything, including something that I loved the most, which was reading. And every time a friend would update something that they've read on Goodreads, I would just feel like such a failure. Because it was a reminder that people were still going on with their lives and I somehow felt like in pause. And it was hard to see that people have a better time adjusting to changes in their life than others. And I'm one of those people that something really small can throw me off. And for the next 2 weeks, I'm like a completely different person. And I got to the point where I ended up deleting my Goodreads. I ended up deleting every book that I had logged on. I kept no record of it. I didn't write them down. I didn't do anything. I didn't commemorate it. I just did it out of sheer panic. I couldn't think about everything that I had read, everything that I wanted to read. I just felt like such deep pressure to just continue on with life in a way that made sense when nothing in the world made sense. I think after those 2 weeks, I thought to myself that I'm more than what I do. And I had to think a lot about just who I was and how reading really becomes about who you are after you finish a book. And how it impacts you and how those books are somehow inside of me in a memory that I can witness in my actions or in my thoughts. And just because they're not in a physical form doesn't mean they don't exist. So you can say I've had an existential crisis, but I'm doing a lot better and I'm back to reading, even if I'm doing more rereading these days.
I remember you saying something about that before we started recording, how that's maybe not so much a goal, but just something you found yourself doing is rereading.
Yeah, I felt the need to revisit some books that just felt monumental to me. One collection of essays that I revisited was Sandra Cisneros' A House of My Own, which jump-started my idea of wanting to move out on my own and seek more independence from my family, something that feels very difficult for Sandra and I as Latina women. I reread The Great Gatsby because it was one of those first books where I thought a lot about status and class and the breaking of things and walking away from them and what all that meant. So I've been doing a lot of rereading of books that I felt changed some dialogue inside of me that I have with myself. And before, I wouldn't let myself reread because there's so many things I wanted already to read. But deleting my Goodreads and my TBR led me down this path of openness that I now live with a lot better.
So. Sounds like a positive thing then.
Yes, I feel more positive in my reading. Before, I had difficult time picking romance books because I'm like, oh, I could be spending 4 hours reading this or reading this new essay collection that came out and really having some deep introspection moment about it. But now I'm like, no, I'll read it. I've read The Hating Game like 4 times, which is not even like a great romance book when I think and compare it to others. But I have reread it so many times. I've reread Normal People so many times. So I've been happy with my decision ever since. And I'm in a better position to look back at it now because I feel like it's spring. Winter always causes me this shift that comes, and then spring comes and I feel more open to decisions I made knee deep in 6 feet of snow.
Yeah. And I saw that there's a movie version of The Hating Game, but it's not free yet. So I haven't watched it yet, but
it's actually on Hulu.
Oh, okay.
It recently came on Hulu and I'm embarrassed to say that I've watched it a total of 10 times.
Wow.
It's not great. I will say that it's not great, but it's great in the fact that like I can watch it and sit through it for so much of this period of upheaval. I've had a really hard time just sitting with anything, a book, a movie, my own feelings, whatever it is. And when I find something that I can sit through without completely wanting to tear my hair out, I watch it. I've watched it like 10 times. I'm a Lucy Hale stan, though. I think she's beautiful. I liked her in Pretty Little Liars. So I might be biased, but I really thought the movie was terrible, but so, so good.
That must be the lead actress in The Hating Game, is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I won't even tell you how many times I've seen Normal People on Hulu as well.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It was a good adaptation, I thought.
Yeah. And did you see the trailer for Conversations with Friends?
I did. I didn't love that book as much, so I don't know what to think.
Okay. I'm going to watch it. I'll probably rewatch it. But I think that Sally Rooney had some input on this one as well. So hopefully it'll be just as good.
Yeah, I'll definitely try it.
Yeah.
What about, did you watch like the romance show everyone's watching, Bridgerton?
No, I have not. And I think the reason I haven't is because I don't know how to feel about the period piece of it all. Like I have some hard time with period pieces. So I don't know if it's like the constraints of the time and all of that, but I've only heard good things. So I might dabble.
It's cute.
Yeah. And I also have a easier time with movies than like sitting through a show.
Well, thanks for talking about some of those things. It's always nice to kind of hear where you're at in your reading.
It's always nice to catch up.
Well, I know we each brought books to talk about that we've recently read and liked as well. So if you would like to go first.
Yes. The first book I'm going to talk about is called Very Cold People by Sarah Manguso. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And this is a recent book that came out. I believe it came out this year. And I saw it on TikTok being recommended by this TikTok person that I follow. And she described it as cringy and slow moving. And I'm like, cringy and slow moving. That's exactly what I like to read about. And it's about a girl named Ruthie, who's from a town in Massachusetts. Nothing happens in the book. So I'll start there. So if you're looking for plot, this is not it. However, if you're looking for a coming of age story that has a thread that links all of the things that happen with a theme, this is the book for you. Ruthie talks a lot about living in the cold landscape of Massachusetts among people that have a really affluent lifestyle in New England, and how her life does not match up to that. And she talks a lot about the milk she drinks that's powdered, or the garage sales she goes to, and the blankets with holes in them, and how all of that sort of makes up how she views herself. All these small things feel like a reflection upon her. And then as you move through the story, you realize that she's talking about things because there's something in the air that she's avoiding. It's easier to talk about feeling out of place with more affluent people than it is, I think, to talk about the ways in which that reflects in dynamics between men and women, men and children, women and children. And you get to know her mom and you get to know her dad, and you realize that there are ways in which Ruthie is trying to understand herself through her parents. And it's not until she puts a piece of the puzzle together that she can finally understand who they are and what that means to her identity and the identity of all the young girls in this town. There is some trigger warning for abuse and child abuse. So if that's something that you find disturbing, I would not necessarily pick this up if you're feeling a little unsure.
Sounds good.
It's a very, very interesting look. And I'm not from Massachusetts, and I don't have a Jewish background. I am Puerto Rican and come from Spanish-speaking family. And yet Ruthie felt so much like myself growing up, and all of these questions that I also had about the relationships between people in my family and how those relationships were created long before me, but I continue to feel the repercussions of those actions. And I feel a really special place in my heart for Ruthie, who's unflinching and honest, and who's willing to really look at her distaste of her parents with frankness. So I really enjoyed this book.
I also kind of like this idea that one person's negative book review can be someone else's like, oh, I want to read that.
Yeah. And I love a book about frigid parents. I remember I had a friend that told me that the hugs of her parents felt like sitting on the hardwood floor. And that's such a strange sentence that I understand so well. And when I was reading about Ruthie, so much of what she wanted was warmth, and so much of what she got back was just hardness. It's a very special book. I hope more people read it. She has a backlist. I do have a few of her books that I want to get through.
Sounds great.
And this is another example of the way Goodreads, I feel like, would have stopped me from picking this up, because it doesn't always have great reviews there. And I think it's when you pick up something like this and you don't see a plot that's going anywhere, I understand why that could be frustrating. But the plot's really the development of this character.
I was just looking at one of the books she's written. It looks like a lot of them are nonfiction, but then this book is a novel, right?
Yeah, but I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think she takes aspects of her childhood into her hands. But it is a novel, and it does feel like a novel. That's the thing. It feels, when you're sitting down, you're like, I am reading a book. It's exciting to know that I get to reread this.
Yeah. I have an accidental theme in my books today, and I'll see if you can figure it out. I realized that after I finally picked them. My first one is End of the World House by Adrienne Kelt. At the very beginning, it's about these two friends, Bertie and Kate. They've been friends for a long time. And they're the kind of friends that, like, even if they're apart, when you come back together, it's like no time has passed. And they have their own kind of language. They're those like crazy friends that cackle at, you know, shared jokes in a restaurant or something. They have just their own like shared secrets, all that stuff. And so there's a lot of bad things going on in the world where they are. So there's been bombings, just random bombings. They don't really ever attribute it to anything. There's a lot of environmental disaster going on, a lot of supply chain issues, similar to what we know. And there's some refugees are coming in from the Midwest of all places, and they decide that they're going to buy a house together in Northern California. But then randomly, Kate decides she doesn't want to do that, and she's going to move to Los Angeles, even though Los Angeles has become even more dangerous. And so they decide to take a trip, like a friendship trip, to Paris, because Paris is relatively safe, even though sometimes there are bombings. And so at first, it seems like it's going to be about these friends and this kind of like apocalypse feeling. And then they go to Paris and they meet this man who says, even though the Louvre is shut down to visitors because of the increase in violence, he can get them in if they come to this one door and knock a certain time of day. And so they get up and they do that. And first thing they do is go see the Mona Lisa, of course. And so that painting is actually on the book cover. And so it's kind of a weird thing that this random person lets them in. They don't really know why. And it's kind of a weird experience being in a museum, because you know how museums are kind of created in this way where it's almost never ending. You can almost go in loops and never make your way out. I was like, okay, reading along. And then the next chapter, it's the next day, and they're in their hotel room, waking up, getting ready to go to the Louvre for this first day again. Only some things are different. And I was kind of like, okay, this is strange. What's happening? And then another chapter, she gets up in the hotel and it's her ex-boyfriend that's in the room with her. And it doesn't seem right. But then she's like, oh, but this must be right. This must be my life, whatever, you know? And so there's all these things that happen. So you realize that there's some kind of time loop maybe going on. And it's hard to tell if it's based on the person or the museum or the apocalypse in some way. Like maybe something is strange has happened. Is it just these people in particular? And then all these other, like these other iterations of time and space that happen. It gets very confusing. But at the same time, I was really enjoying being confused, because I was just kind of like, oh yeah, this is fun. I'm going to keep following this through. I'm not really sure that the ending was satisfying for me. I'm still kind of thinking about it. And I'm obviously not going to give the ending away, but it was just different enough for me to really kind of sink my teeth into it, you know, because I've read a lot of apocalypse, a lot of disaster kind of books, and this one felt very new to me.
I don't know if I can read books like this. I tried with a book that was very popular. I can't think of the name right now, but it was very popular. It even got auctioned to be a movie where things were slightly off. And it was like a situation where who was the homeowner of the house? I don't know who the book is popular. People are probably yelling right now.
Is it Leave the World Behind?
That's it.
Yeah.
And I got 55 pages in. And the minute it got just slightly unsettling, I had never thrown a book across faster. Unsettling is not me. Unsettling to me unsettles me. I have a hard time when my dreams feel like real, but they're slightly off. That's difficult. Do you feel like the ending explained why things were off?
No, okay. not as much as I was hoping it was going to. And I think the comparison that you made, though, even though you didn't finish Leave the World Behind, that I hadn't thought of that book, but it is very similar in the idea that what's happening in the wider world, you know, it's something terrible, but you don't really know the specifics. And yet it's not the core of the story, but it also is, because all these things that are happening wouldn't have happened if this other terrible stuff wasn't happening. Right. So it feels related, but you never get quite enough of it. That's part of what's so unsettling to the reader experience. And I do think there is some similarity to this. It made me think of Pyrrha Nisi, which I didn't love, but a lot of people loved, in that sense of like, there's this person experiencing this world that they don't understand. You also don't understand, but you see different parts of it than they do. And still it's not a complete picture. I also thought of the movie Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. It kind of has that feeling to it where, I mean, I do think when you're going through, like when times are really hard, it does kind of strip away the superfluous relationships, and it leaves you with the friend who you've known forever or the ex you never got out of your head. And those are the two characters that keep showing up for Birdie in her many loops of time. So that makes sense, I think.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
I guess that part of me, I recorded an episode with you. I remember this vividly, where I talked about, I think a book in translation, I don't know if it's from Arabic, called The Queue. And it's sort of unsettling in the same way, where all these people are living in this very apocalyptic life where they stand in line hours at a time, but no one knows what they're standing in line for. And I recall telling you that the book has no blood. It has no violence. It has no violence against anything that makes sense. Yet there's something very frightening that happens in the book that is deeply violent without it seeming so. And I guess that if you think about things that you think about throughout the day, or the memories that you sort of store away, for me, it's like, I really hope I'm not thinking about that third grade mishap I had with Amir Drake at the end of my life, because I don't feel like it added anything, but it must have, because I think about him like once a week. So these weird things that we store in our brains that you keep inside toggling around, and it unsettles you. I don't know. I'm intrigued though by the fact that there's an ex-boyfriend. I love a sort of reliving ex-boyfriend type thing. Yeah, I might pick this one up.
Yeah, and it's even more confusing at times, because sometimes the other characters seem to know what's going on, like seem to have some kind of grasp or control of the situation. And like, what is that about? why do they have that? Is it just because they figured something out, or is it because like they planned it? I mean, are they part of it? You know, and I don't know that those questions are ever fully answered, but it's the fear of that that's important. This is a really unique book.
Okay. It makes me think of that Leonardo DiCaprio movie in which he goes a few dreams deep and everything is very unsettling. And he says that dreams are mirrored after real life, but when you look at people really closely in your dreams, you realize that it's actually really weird.
Is that okay. Inception?
Inception, yeah. There's a scene that I remember vividly when he says that what dreams are unsettling because they almost mirror life a little too closely.
So. This is so interesting, because there are elements of this that will connect to the other book. Like I said, that it'll be interesting to get there, but let's get to your second book.
Yeah. Okay. So, okay. My second book is unsettling on an emotional level, which I think should be my slogan, because I'm all about emotional development in books, because I'm a Taurus. And so thinking about these things are fun. I will say right off the bat that if you don't like frustrating endings, do not pick this one up. I picked it up because I loved the cover. So this was a totally a cover that I got hooked on and I had to read it. It's called A Very Nice Girl by Imogen Crimp. And it's about a protagonist named Anna Vittori in London. She is ambitious. She is beautiful. She is young and she can sing. She is very poor and broke and comes from a family with some level of dysfunction. So moving to London was vital to her development. But once she gets there, the question is, does she have the focus and the power to harness this ambition and turn it into something? And like every young woman in London, she meets a man. And he's not great, like most men are not. And she finds herself trying to decide whether Max is controlling and rich or controlling and not. Like, what is the story with Max? And ultimately, it's hard to know because although she meets this man, it's what he does to her dreams and her passion that tells the story. It's not going to offer any closure. You're not going to sit down and have a good feeling about Anna because Anna's human and she's complex and she's scared and she's ruthless, but she's also kind. And she sometimes does things that like many of us shouldn't do. And sometimes she does things that she should do. And the people that love her are both frustrated and angry at her, but also proud of her. I found it to be really refreshing to read a few hundred pages, actually not a short book, about a very human feeling about loving someone that maybe is not 100% worthy of our love. And if that person isn't, the question becomes, do we still give our love away? And I think that that's ultimately really what we all want to know is how do we give our love and how do we still maintain a sense of identity and control even when we do? So it's a beautiful book. I really would like more people to read it and tell me what they thought about that ending because I left feeling very mixed about it.
Yeah. It's funny how we have so many ending issues with our lately book. I wonder, because these have all been pretty new books, I wonder if that's going to be a trend now.
Well, this felt like a fade to black, which means like, you know, there's an action that takes place in the last sentence of the book, and you don't know what that action means for the character. And I guess that's a more realistic ending, right? Is it not?
I guess.
You know, when I die, I want my tombstone to say there are no conclusions. And maybe there are no conclusions. Maybe a tidy ending. Pick up a romance, you know? Yeah. Pick up a, I don't know, pick up a, because not even a nonfiction historical book has a tidy ending. They're so very much debating our history. Mm-hmm. So if you want a tidy ending, this is not, come to the wrong place.
I know. When we were going to record last week, I was going to talk about this novel set in Ukraine in 2014. And even that, like, it feels, I mean, not outdated, but like the story continues in
inconclusive.
Right, right. And like the world we are right now, we know the story has changed. It's just a moment in time, but it's not everything.
Yeah, good point. Good way to put it. Does your next book have a frustrating ending too?
Not as much because it's a set of short stories.
Okay.
So okay, here we are. I'm not sure I'm ready to talk about this, but I'm going to try. It's called The Memory Librarian by Janelle Monáe. Also contributors, Johanka Delgado, Eve L. Ewing, Elia Don Johnson, Danny Lohr, and Cherie Renee Thomas. And it's not clear how much the contributors are contributing. So I'll just leave that there because I'm not sure how much of the book she's written. Well, actually, I just found out that she just announced that she's considering herself non-binary now. So I don't know if she's going by she or they, but all the descriptions of the book say she. Want to be respectful of her decisions. So this is actually written in conjunction with her last album, Dirty Computer, which is, I think, 2 years old at this point. So what is a dirty computer? A dirty computer is something that has memories or experiences that are not what is considered standard. So anyone who's outside the norm or the majority might be a dirty computer as a person, right? Okay, so if you think of it that way, so there's people in this society. So this is another, it's a dystopia. It's not so much apocalypse, it's dystopia. There's this corporation / country / society called the New Dawn, who has used technology alongside totalitarianism to try to control the population and make everyone think the same way. So if they catch you and you're outside of those realms, you get wiped, basically. And you either start over or you die, they don't care. And then there are these people called memory librarians that are tasked with holding the memories of a place. And so the very first story, the longest story, is called Memory Librarian. And it's about this person who has a history that she doesn't want people to know about, but she's also tasked with holding memories for this place, which is, it's hard to kind of wrap your head around. There's also a story about this hotel, the Pink Hotel, P-Y-N-K, that was supposed to be a refuge for people who were feminist and queer and outside of the expectations in that arena. And there's like the spiritual cave that they have that feeds into it somehow. And then a trans person shows up, and then the community is split as to whether or not they support that person. And so it kind of becomes a almost like a rhetoric exercise in that whole second wave feminism being anti-trans and stuff like that. So that was interesting in how they dealt with that subject matter within the context of this society where you have these people coming in. They also had some kind of people who, this is, it gets really complicated. So it's hard to parse it. I can't remember what they're called, but they have the ability to sense emotion through scent. So like if someone ever felt a certain way about someone else, they would be able to smell it like a scent memory, but they work for the bad guys. And so they sometimes can masquerade as regular people and then show up at a party and then destroy everything because of what they know. And there's several other stories in the universe. I think Memory Librarian is probably the most striking. I'm still kind of processing it. It's very interesting. The concepts are so interesting, right? And you can tell that it's reactionary toward like where our society feels like it is right now and all the things that have been happening. And they throw a few really strong characters in there that are very subversive and resistant, and you love to see that. And so in some ways, it kind of feels like a book that's written for the people that already get it. So you can be like, yeah, I don't know what else to say. It has an amazing cover too. So
I don't know how I became so misinformed. I thought she was writing a book of essays about writing her album. I didn't know that it was an album that inspired this. I didn't know that. That makes sense, I guess.
Well, and there's a piece that I'm missing that I meant to have finished before we talked, and so I apologize for that. But there's some hour-long video in YouTube that I think is supplemental to the album that is also supposed to kind of introduce the feel of what you find in the book. And I'm absolutely certain that's the connector piece that I'm missing. I mean, I've listened to the album, but it's hard to connect it to the book for me unless I sit there and like really study the lyrics. But I think this film is probably that like extra like media piece.
Yeah, in a way, I feel like I followed you the whole dirty computer thing. And then you said a house that houses, and I've somewhere along the way, I lost the thread. But it's fascinating because I feel like something like this is meant to be something that you discuss with others that has also read it and sort of get their opinions on what they think. Very, very cool, I have to say.
And so, okay, I just looked it up, and the film on YouTube is called Dirty Computer, and then in brackets, emotion picture. So not emotion.
That's witty. That's clever.
Yeah. So I probably should have watched that first, but I also just like the idea of a multimedia creative exercise anyway, just in general. I like that.
I get it because I listen to a lot of podcasts and sometimes like I got into this really weird moment where I was like, if I watched a movie, then I would like search for an actor on a podcast to see if like they had anything to say about like the movie. So that feels like my own way of interacting with two arts. So this already comes slotted in. Like this is something that you can do alongside this. And it feels more like an activity than it does a reading. It's a lot more proactive, that's for sure. That's very interesting. I would embark on it. Like I would totally embark on something like this and get a few people to listen to the album, read the book, and then talk about it.
Yeah, it would be really interesting. I mean, you could study it in a class, probably.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And I think she's just an artist that's, well, it feels like the right people know about her, but sometimes she gets not as much attention as I think she deserves, just as a creative person.
Yeah, agreed. I love the way she dresses. When I was navigating Pinterest, I would put her name in so that I can see her outfits because I found them to be very quirky. Mm-hmm. So there is a way that I can see how this book really is something that she herself come up with and like with a team of people. That's cool.
Yeah. And some of those other people I listed, like I'm like aware of them, but I haven't read their works. Like I have a book by Elia Don Johnson. I just haven't read it yet. It's called The Summer Prince, I think.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So I kind of want to dig into some of their work too, because clearly they're doing some interesting stuff. Well, let's get to your last book.
Okay. So my last book is a book you read. And it's what I call, there's certain authors that I call auto-buy authors. And they're authors that I liked their first book or like their first two books. And like, no matter what they write next, like I'm on board. And that's Weiqi Wang. I read her newest book, Joan is Okay. She previously published Chemistry. But Joan is Okay is also about a 30-something young woman. But Joan, this time, is an ICU doctor in New York City. And although I'm resistant to read anything about the pandemic, I trust that Wang was not going to write about the pandemic in a flippant way. I trust that she was going to write about it with the seriousness that I feel like it deserves to be spoken about. So Joan is the daughter of Chinese parents who came to America. And then once Joan sort of succeeded in school and devoted herself to work, they moved back to China. She gets a call about her father having passed away, suddenly dying. And she goes back to China to be with her mother, who then later on visits her and is unable to move back due to COVID restrictions. You move along with Joan as she's developing a relationship with her mother after the death of her father, and how that relationship now changes due to a dynamic that now is different because it's missing one person. You also meet Fang, which is her brother, who's an established man in the financial world and who has quite a lot of money compared to Joan. What I liked about Joan was that she felt a fully fleshed character, a character that sort of felt like any person that's working really hard and feels that their parents don't often get to show how proud they are, even though she's working very hard, or are resistant to give praise. And I found that her relationship with her brother is complicated, and her relationship with her sister-in-law is a very unique relationship. And really, this is a book about how she navigates the people that love her and she loves back, and how sometimes that love looks different. And sometimes how the love you have towards other people is not enough, and how the love that you have with yourself is far more important. And I found it to be, like chemistry, emotionally weighty, meaty, something you can really like navigate when you're reading and think about. But she's not mushy, and I appreciate that, because I don't think I can handle mush. And she's the only author that I closed a book and I feel a sense of both lightness and heaviness. And the lightness comes from the fact that she can really describe complicated characters without making them feel like they're terrible people for having emotions. And I appreciate that as I work through what my emotions mean, you know, in a time of great change. I feel like authors like Wang really show that like no one has the answers, and that the only thing you have is how you feel. And like, that's maybe the first step into navigating the world, is intuitively connecting yourself to your heart instead of your brain.
One of the things I remember about the book is how she feels content being alone, or that's, I couldn't decide if that was true or if we're supposed to think that that's the story this character tells herself to feel okay with being alone. You know what I mean? Like, there's a little bit of a difference there. And I wasn't really sure in the end which way the author wanted us to think.
I would argue that Joan herself isn't sure whether she really believes if she's okay being this alone. And maybe the fact that she feels both ways, that she feels okay being alone, and sometimes she's not okay being alone. And I relate to that so hard.
Yeah. I think especially people do that, especially during COVID, right? But it seemed like this character had that kind of going on before that too. It's just kind of heightened by COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked that she, I don't know, like it was almost like the actual stress was having to deal with people that she was so used to not having to deal with.
Like, that's such a good point.
I totally feel that way about my family sometimes, because I live across the country from them and most of my daily life has nothing to do with them, you know? And so when all of a sudden it does, it can feel very disruptive.
I get that. You know what I really enjoyed too? And I found that this is a rabbit hole that I want to go through. Sister-in-law relationships. Those are so tricky. And the only, I don't have a sister-in-law, but the only background that I have of them is watching novelas, Mexican novelas, that really show that evil sister-in-law. And like, in this book, the sister-in-law wasn't evil. There was nothing inherently bad about the sister-in-law. They were just different people. And I want to go through an entire series of books examining sister-in-law relationships. I am fascinated about this weird dynamic between connecting families and both being the same gender, and how they're both married, how they navigate their respective husbands. I don't know. Did you find that interesting in the book, or is that a hang up that I have?
I mean, I think it's really interesting. I mean, I have my own sister-in-laws, you know, so I've had to navigate that. You come into that weird relationship where you don't meet this other person that's so important to your sibling until they're grown too. And I think people make a lot of assumptions about what that should be. And I was really resistant to some of those assumptions. Like, you're not my new best friend.
Even the name, think about it. Name feels so weight. There's so much weight to that name. Like, sister-in-law is, you're having the word sister in there. I think, yeah.
Just in-laws in general and how different families deal with it. One of my coworkers refers to her in-laws as mom and dad. And I remember my mom telling me, because some of my dad's siblings' spouses do that, but my mom was like, never, I'm never doing that. She's not my mother. I will call her mom. But it does just kind of boil down to the relationship that you have. Yeah. Well, when you write your thesis about this, I'll like to read it.
If you think about any books that you've read with this, please let me know, because how that differs in different cultures. Like, think about it. That must be so different in different cultures. Yeah.
Well, you know, in Bridgerton, the siblings are a very powerful force. So both for their own siblings, but then the potential spouses of their siblings, you know? So
yeah,
that's where I think I've seen it most recently. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because family becomes such an intricate part of economy and power.
Well, and I think that, like, even with Wakey Wang?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Well, but even with her, like, her brother is so rich, you know, so, like, it does still figure in with them, too. It has a lot to do with his place in society. Like, he's really, really sensitive about that power, and I think she, by not having a spouse, feels freer of that. And doesn't understand how much pressure that he experiences from it.
I think you're right.
So yeah, it's a really nuanced book. I thought it was really good. And I felt bad for the mother, actually, not being able to return home. She's lost her spouse. She's lost her home. Like,
and her independence, because I have a feeling that there are some aspects of her son who tries to sort of control the mom out of, like, love, but, you know,
he thinks it's his job.
Yeah.
And she's never asked him to do it.
Yeah. That's such a good point. Yeah.
Well, I've never read her book Chemistry, but I feel like I missed it. I should have read it.
Oh, it's so good. It's shorter than this one. And what I liked about it is sort of examined sort of the same things, but with a boyfriend. Yeah. And, it's interesting. I love, she's an author that I'm going to follow for a very long time.
It's nice to find those for sure. Well, before we go, do you want to share any book you're excited to read next or that you've already started?
Yes, I am excited to read Either Or, I believe it's called, by Elif Batuman. She wrote The Idiot, which is one of the best covers with a book in my life, like the pink, that just all of it. I am so excited to read this. I can't wait. I feel like we are really going to get a sophomore book in terms of, now she's a sophomore in college, the main protagonist. I don't know.
It follows the same character.
I didn't realize that. Oh, yeah. And I think, yes. And she said in an interview, not to fangirl, but she said that in her mind, she sees it as a freshman book, a sophomore book, a junior book, and like a senior book, like a college edition of each book. And I am obsessed with this idea, because who I was freshman year and who my chaotic energy of my junior year mixed with the post-depression of my senior year, yes, I can't wait. This is a book I'm excited and so excited to dig into.
Well, and that character has spent, before her sophomore year, she's been to Uzbekistan, of all places. Because that comes up. I had just read The Possessed this year, which is her book. It's supposed to be about Russian works and the people who read them, but it's not. It's very much more a memoir. And it's about when she lived in Uzbekistan, which I didn't realize was autobiographical. So I've revisited her story kind of from that angle recently, but I've been waiting for her next novel. So I'm super excited.
Is she as quirky as the main character in The Idiot?
I kind of feel like she must be. Like, she's just drawn to weird stuff. Okay. So speaking of chemistry, the book that I started this morning in audio is Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmus. And it's read by Miranda Raisin, who I just think that's a really cute name. It's about a female chemist in the 1950s, I think. But I should say, because no one warned me, that in within the first hour of the audio, so probably the first 10% of the book, there's a pretty violent sexual assault. So whew, I wasn't expecting that. And I didn't think it was within the tone I was expecting of the book. So just fair warning. I'm past it now, so it's fine. But I just wasn't, I didn't see it coming. I have to warn other people.
I know the book cover feels so cotton candy.
Yeah, it looks like a campy novel. Yeah. And maybe it gets there, but that's not where it starts.
Okay.
So, yeah, just fair warning. But it does feel like I've read so many novels about female science characters and romances and regular novels everywhere. Gotta love it.
It's that whole women in STEM. Mm-hmm. Like there's this like movement of showing how women are in all parts of society doing really great scientific things.
Well, and though Allie Hazelwood wrote those three STEManista novels, which I've read all three novellas, yeah. The romance novellas.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
As someone who can't, there science, I just know the word, it's not a verb for me, like I just so
they don't really get into it.
Oh, okay.
You just know that like that's their job and that's about all that matters.
Okay. Yeah,
well thank you so much for joining me to talk about books today. I've really enjoyed it as always.
I hope I'm welcomed back a second time. Well, not a second time, now more than
it'll be seventh
times. Yeah, seventh time. I really enjoyed my time talking to you.
Thanks for listening to the Reading Envy podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Reading Envy, or find a complete listing of our podcast episodes, as well as all of the books discussed on today's episode at readingenvy.com.